Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for June 16, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, approval of USDA's budget continues to be on hold. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason digs deep into the June WASDE report for hints on where USDA might be going with corn yield later in the summer. And the folk from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter July wheat, 708 and a quarter, down 5 on the settlement. September, 708 and a half, down 7. July wheat, the soft variety, settled at 581, down 5. September, 591 and a quarter, down 5 and a quarter. July corn settled at 441, down 6. September, 436 and three quarters, down 6 and a quarter. December, 442, down 5 and a half. July soybeans settled at 1421 and three quarters, down 4. August, 1367 and a quarter, down 2 and a quarter. September, 1255 and three quarters, down 4 and a quarter. November, 1217, down 4 and a quarter. July soybean meal settled at 462.40, down 550. July soybean oil settled at 39.50, down 19 cents. June live cattle settled at 147.15, down 45. August feeder cattle, 208.27 and a half, up 12 and a half. And July lean hogs at 124.45, down 2.55. And those are Monday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says a favorable mix of rain and sunshine and warm temperatures will occur over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. Rain will fall abundantly in the northern Midwest this week and may increase somewhat in the lower Midwest next week. Rainfall over the coming 7 days will range from 1 to 3 inches across the northern Midwest from eastern North Dakota through Minnesota and northern Iowa to Michigan, and a few areas in northern Illinois, northern Indiana, and northern Ohio. Rainfall in the lower Midwest at the same time will range from 0.3 to 1 inch with local totals to 1 3/4 inches. The southernmost tip of Illinois, western Kentucky, far southwestern Indiana, and southeastern Missouri will be the driest. Daily high temperatures over the coming week will be in the 70s in the north and 80s and lower 90s in the south. Low temperatures at night will be in the 60s and lower 70s most often, with a few 50-degree readings in the south. Still, some winter wheat areas may become a little too wet, and that could raise some grain quality issues if the wetter-biased conditions last too much longer. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, what started out in the wheat market and the corn market managed throughout the day to spread over even into the front-end soybeans, which had started out for the bulls on a promising tone, but we end up in the July down 4 and the Novi's down 4.25.
Yeah, kind of disappointment for the bull all around. There's a little bit of optimism coming in this morning here that the market can make a stand and record some type of dead cat bounce. Things not that terribly bearish from the point that, crush report above expectations. Crush is going to have to slow down here. Otherwise, we're going to have to raise the crush numbers. Going to have to mess with the residual numbers. We move down the road here if demand remains, somewhat strong. There's trade one to support the bull spread in the beans. Then about midday, that kind of gave up ship, basically looking at, favorable weather over the next 2 weeks at least, and that's sort of playing out to keep sellers, on the aggressive and buyers with their hands in their pocket.
And we'll find out fairly shortly what USDA thinks about crop progress, but the average trade guess was for unchanged, so you know where their mindset is.
Well, when you get the 75%, that's about as good as you can really get. I mean, there's been some 80. I think the record's 80 at this time a while back. But, when you look at the kind of the weather pattern, it's favorable for most. But there's some areas that's been hit by hail. There's been some areas hit by too much rain. There's been some wind damage in some areas. Not enough to see a substantial drop in the good to excellent category. But, we'll probably hold steady here for a week or two, then see if we see some deterioration or see an increase in the poor to very poor areas.
So I suppose one of the questions is at 442, how much is priced in for a crop that would be 165 bushels or better?
Well, we're probably fairly close for this time of year. Naturally, if it's that, at the end, as we go into fall, we've got, $4 looking at us. But judging by the option values, and so forth, it kind of looks at the trade believes there's going to be, some demand surface near the $4, level. The thing, though, as we move down the road, there are some estimates we could be substantially higher than the 165. There's some, research or speculation that we could come out with, 15% above trend line yields. There's been two crop years in the past where that's happened. We came in 15% above trend line yield. That would put corn yield up to 182 bushels to the acre. That might be kind of a lofty level to achieve, but, we're kind of in a position here. We're probably starting to price in the best yield potential here in the next month.
Low. It's often said the cure for low prices is low prices. How about on the demand side? Will we see additional demand off of these lower levels?
I think there's going to be willing buyers, but right now with the weather forecast the way it is, there's no urgency to kind of step up and be a buyer right at the moment here. Most buyers have their hands in their pocket. I think they'll be more aggressive. You get down to December futures, $4.25, and, of course, $4. If we get down those levels, I think they'd be a little bit more willing to be a buyer. There's still plenty of old corn out there to be sold yet. There's guys that, sold beans and held on the corn and still waiting for some rally potential in corn to try to get it moved here before we get into this fall. So there's no urgency. Ethanol still remains profitable. Livestock sector, profitable on the hog and poultry side. The beef sector, if you get the feeders bought, it could be rewarding, but that's been a tough challenge to get that to pencil out at current levels.
We're seeing that bull spread in soybeans work again.
Well, it kind of give and take. We've had a setback here. It moved below the, well, all, winter long. It traded between 230 and almost 260. Mm-hmm. And clockwork, man. The guys buy 230 and get out around 260, and it worked well for them. Then, boy, once we went below 230, that was it. There's some ideas there'd be some support here too, but some of your larger traders feel that spread get down about 177, 180, and they'd be a buyer of that bull spread there in the July Nov. But you got to be careful because we're going to be looking at deliveries here fairly quickly, so you might want to start looking at the August-November spreads. You want to play that bull spread theory.
Will it be the August or the September-November, or September-November too close?
Well, Sep's kind of tough in there. If you're wanting to do the spread, you got to be kind of in the lead lead contract. I don't know if there's really going to be a whole lot of bean deliveries for say. So, you know, there's still time to make a play in that July Nov spread. You can make a lot or lose a lot in a pretty quick period of time.
Well, let's look at the flat price in November 12/17, down 4.25. Still above 1206 is a level that's been advertised that if we were to fall below on a closing basis, well, maybe you ought to put on some additional sales. How much more time from time management weeks do you think we have before we might give up the ghost at 1206 if the crop is continued to look favorable?
Oh, well, that's a good question. You know, usually this 1st of July, July weekends often change a trend or else we continue the trend. But, you know, it could take out that $12 level at any time. But that's the thing. Everybody's bearish beans. Everybody's been looking for beans to go to zero for the last couple of months, so it might be a little slower process, you know, if you're short or wanting that the market to go down. You know, these beans, new crop beans, are a $2 discount to the old crop. And two, we got to remember that Asia is going to need some more beans here as we move into this fall. So there's several factors in there that could keep it above $12 for a week or two. After that, the weather's favorable. And this demand doesn't pick up, then we can kind of roll on over.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Okay, Dave, take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. In agricultural news, there is still no word whether the House will take up USDA's budget this week after number two Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's loss in a primary on June 10th. Members in the Agricultural Appropriations Subcommittee say that the timing for continuing the USDA bill is a little fluid right now. This week, the Senate planned to consider the agriculture bill with two other spending bills that have already passed in the House, but that was with the assumption that the House would finish the agricultural bill last week. Hillshire Brands Company says today that its board of directors no longer recommends the company's pending acquisition of Pinnacle Foods Incorporated, given Tyson Foods' hefty offer to acquire Hillshire. Earlier this month, Tyson boosted its offer to buy Hillshire to $63 a share. Hillshire today says that its board now recommends a vote against the Pinnacle Foods deal, calling the Tyson offer a superior proposal. European Union member states have come one step closer to being able to ban the cultivation of biotech crops within their borders for reasons that have nothing to do with science, following a vote on the proposal by the EU's environmental ministers. The action would effectively give member states the ability to decide whether GMOs can be grown in their own territory by being able to opt out of cultivation licenses for reasons other than concerns for health or the environment. The measure now goes to the European Parliament, which is expected to make a final decision on the issue by the end of the year. Four national food organizations have filed a lawsuit against Vermont's new labeling law for genetically engineered foods. They filed it in federal court challenging the measure's constitutionality. The Grocery Manufacturing Association says that Vermont's mandatory GMO labeling law is a costly and misguided measure that will set the nation on a path toward a 50-state patchwork of GMO labeling policies that do nothing to advance the health and safety of consumers. Vermont's legislature passed the labeling law in April, and Governor Peter Shumlin signed the bill in May. The labeling requirements would take effect in 2 years on July 1st of 2016. The lawsuit argues the state needs a compelling interest to restrict information that food manufacturers provide about their products. The International Monetary Fund foresees the U.S. economy growing a modest 2% this year, below its previous estimate of 2.7%. That would be nearly identical to the economy's 1.9% growth in 2013. The IMF says a brutal winter and a slowing housing recovery caused the economy to shrink during the first 3 months of 2014. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA, in the June World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report, made an interesting quote about the potential for this year's crop. Todd Gleason has more on what, if anything, it might mean for future adjustments to corn yield.
USDA releases the WASD report once a month. It puts forth a projected supply and demand table for many crops, including corn. This month, the agency did not change any of the numbers in the corn table, but it did make an interesting point in the accompanying commentary. It says, quote, "The projected U.S. corn yield remains at 165.3 bushels to the acre, as a slightly slower than normal mid-May planting progress is expected to be offset by very favorable early season crop and weather conditions. U.S. crop conditions in the most recent crop progress report are the best in 4 years for the aggregated 18 reported states and better than any time since 2007 for the Corn Belt," unquote. Well, University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good believes the comment is a nod to the way USDA interprets the data used to make yield calculations.
Yeah, I think what the folks at the WASD rely on a little more than they did in the past is a crop weather model for forecasting corn yields, and that model incorporates the timeliness of corn planting. They use kind of a mid-May cutoff date, as corn planted after mid-May is considered late and would, under normal conditions, would suffer a slight yield penalty. So they're saying we had a slightly higher percentage of the crop planted after mid-May, which could be a slight negative impact on yield. But that's being offset by what they deem as very favorable moisture conditions. And so the net effect in their mind would keep a yield potential still at the trend value that they calculate, 165.3.
USDA then has not yet changed the national average corn yield. The commentary suggests it doesn't foresee doing so either if all things were to remain the same for the rest of the growing season. That's likely not to happen, but it does give Illinois' Daryl Good some pause for thought as it relates to how farmers might price out their corn crop.
We kind of said our thinking as getting 15 to 25% of the crop priced when we pushed new crop bids up towards the $5 level, and then took the position that as prices declined back towards the insurance guarantee that was established in the spring, that there was less incentive to be pricing corn. Obviously, if prices continue to go down, we will all wish that we had priced more, but some of those potential losses will be offset by the floor that's established by crop insurance. So at this juncture, we'd probably be thinking just holding at that 20% level and See if there's a potential summer bounce here of some sort. Otherwise, we'll rely on crop insurance to set the safety net.
That's a pretty easy marketing plan. Hopefully, farmers have already carried out steps 1 and 2, buying crop insurance and making forward sales on about 20% of the crop. The above $5 part, that one might be wishful for some. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
We just heard from Dr. Good some cash sales of about 20% of van sales. You seeing that kind of activity over your place?
We saw that towards the end of last year, first of this year. People got up to 20, 25% sold on new crop, but then they put their selling shoes away, and we really haven't bought much since the first of the year.
And the phones aren't ringing anytime soon,
no,
I imagine.
As you said in the report, with prices below the crop insurance guarantee, there's just not much incentive to sell at this point unless you're really sure you're going to have a good crop, and we just don't know that for sure. So as a result, farmer marketing for new crop corn and beans has been extremely slow.
And meanwhile, in the future, as the air continues to leak out of the balloon as we head rumbling and moving quickly toward the end of the month, and the acreage report and the quarterly grain stock report, both probably going to be pretty important, I would think.
Yes, yes. And it's right after that, we aren't too far away from pollination. So between the June 30th report and pollination, those two things probably will be the next big market movers.
Yeah, and what do you think about the end of the month reports? What's your gut tell you?
Well, you never know what the government's going to come up with. That's number one. So, you know, we can. Everybody's going to have an opinion, and everybody's going to take a position. But I don't know that I'd be real confident one way or the other, because there are acres that did not get planted. But I hearken back to the March 31 report, and there were a lot of acres that didn't seem to be accounted for compared to previous years. So, on the one hand, we could see an increase from the March 31 report, and on the other hand, we could see a little bit of a decrease. So maybe the one offsets the other. I guess I would look for more bean acres regardless, because some of those corn acres that didn't get planted probably switched to beans. And if they undercounted on the March report, then that would mean more beans too. So the one thing I guess I would, you know, be more confident of is that we'll see more bean acres in the report.
So more bean acres, and right now Novi futures above $12. I suppose that's still a profitable level, if what you say comes to pass.
Yeah, I think the new crop beans are as strong as they are for a few reasons. One, the old crop beans are over $15, so you know that's providing a little bit of strength to the new crop. And we've had very good demand out of China and some other countries. So, you know, demand-driven rallies, you know, tend to hang around a little bit longer. So, you know, for all those reasons, and one or two bushels in the yield, which you know, we don't know what the final yield is going to be yet for this crop, can make a big difference. That's the difference between a shortage and a surplus. So for all those reasons, I think new crop beans have hung in there better than what new crop corn and wheat have. And, okay, you know, and we'll just see. It'll be a while before we know for sure what that final yield is going to be.
Very quickly, your prices.
Old crop corn tonight is $4.38. New crop corn, $4.17. Old crop beans, $14.47. New crop, $11.97. And the new wheat is $5.71.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. It's National Fudge Day. Many people think fudge is an American invention. It's believed that the first batch was a batch of caramels that went wrong, thus the name fudge. The first known sale of fudge was in 1886 in Baltimore. The cost was 40 cents a pound. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, the first stone was laid for the world's largest grain windmill in Holland. Known as the Whale, it is still in existence today. In 1855, John Gorey died. Gorey received the first U.S. patent for mechanical refrigeration in 1851.
In 1893, Cracker Jack was introduced at the Columbian Exposition in Chicago. By the way, the secret formula which prevents the molasses-coated popcorn from sticking together came 3 years later, in 1896. A prize in every box was introduced in 1912, and Sailor Jack and Bingo made their first appearance on the box in 1918. In 1903, a one-year-old company registered its trade name, Pepsi-Cola. The original name was Brad's Drink, after Caleb Bradham, the pharmacist who developed the formula. Among the ingredients, carbonated water, sugar, vanilla, oils, pepsin, and cola nut extract. And in 1980, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that patents could be issued for genetically engineered organisms. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist John Davis from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
You know, it's been about 3 years. I mean, about the last 3 years, about this time, a little bit later in the summer, something awful has happened, and so it is now gotten almost out of our memory when we hear words like favorable mix of rain and sunshine.
This is true, and but you know, while we are going to have some relatively anomalous conditions over the next week or two, but those conditions are favorable for crop development in general. We have a warm bias, but certainly no real heat in the forecast here the rest of this week and on into next week. Temperatures will be averaging out to be above normal, but that's a favorable thing at this stage of the game, mm-hmm. and will continue to be a favorable thing until we, you know, end out the month of June. And rainfall, which will be pretty...
Hello?
Prior into next week.
Well, okay. Let's get a little bit about a little bit more about the rainfall. So timely rains is what we're looking at.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, rainfall prospects, they will be above normal over the next week or two. But the bottom line at this stage of the game is for vast majority of acreage in the Midwest, that is a beneficial situation.
And pollination about 3 weeks out now, three and a quarter weeks out. Anything on the horizon that would change your opinion about the general trend of the weather?
Well, at this stage of the game, the thing to watch as we go into the month of July, when, you know, most corn will pollinate during July. And again, this year's pollination window will be relatively large across the Midwest. But the one thing to watch out for is we do have a ridge of high pressure that's beginning to develop across the plains and the Rockies. And so during the month of July, the movement, the intensity, and the precise location of that ridge will really be the key as to if there's going to be any risk here next month. For the rest of June, everything looks very favorable.
Are we close to El Nino? Have we hit El Nino? Where are we on that?
We've dropped off a little bit over the past week's time frame. In fact, water temperatures in the equatorial Pacific have decreased a touch over the past week. So we're not at official El Nino levels here right now, kind of just below those levels of what the official number is, which traditionally a half a degree Celsius above normal across the central equatorial Pacific is a level that you would consider El Nino, but we're not quite there right now.
All right, John, thank you much.
My pleasure, Dave.
John Davis, and he is with Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Have you tried this website yet? WILLAG.org. On it, you'll find all of our audio analysis as well as all the reports from USDA. Won't you go there and try it soon? This is Dave Dickey.